Welcome to Edutopia Radio. This is School of Practice, where we share what works inside real classrooms. I'm Kristen Leong, an editor at Edutopia, and I'm also a former middle school teacher. Earlier this year, we heard from an elementary school teacher in Texas. Her name is Amy Banks. She told us that she was struggling to talk with her students about their learning accommodations.
They just come to me and say, why are there copies of notes in my notebook? And the kids who have preferential seating want to know, why am I always in one of these front seats? And I don't know what to say to them.
Amy's dilemma got us thinking. What do you say when students have questions about accommodations, either their own or another student's? Are there best practices to guide teachers in having these sensitive conversations?
I think this is a massive research hole. Educators struggle with this. They don't know how to bring up a disability to a student. They don't know if they should bring it up.
Rachel Lambert is an education disability researcher at the University of California at Santa Barbara. The lack of research to help guide teachers is only part of the problem. This topic is also rarely addressed in teacher trainings or PD. Many teachers are left on their own to handle the questions about accommodations that come up in class. And some conclude it's better to protect kids and avoid these uncomfortable conversations altogether. That means students are also left on their own to make sense of how they learn.
In my research, I've found that when kids are not told things about how they're grouped or why they're taken out for special education, they make up understandings about why that happens. And often it's about their deficits.
Today, we'll hear from two teachers who are opting in on these tough conversations. Jeremiah Kim has taught fourth and fifth grades for almost a decade in Kansas City. And Dan Volrath has been teaching high school special ed for 20 years. He's based in New Jersey. Dan and Jeremiah will share how they navigate these conversations with students, including whole class discussions and activities that can work across grade levels. They'll also talk about why it's so important to avoid singling out students with accommodations and how to protect students' privacy without implying that disability is a taboo topic. Okay. Let's get into it. First, I'm just curious, what kinds of accommodations are common with each of your students? Jeremiah, do you want to start us off with your fourth graders?
With fourth graders, I think the accommodations that I usually see are like the need for extended time or like modified assignments, or I'll see things where students get like separate setting. They get to sit where they want, or they get like a partner, whether that's a read-aloud partner or someone just to work with.
And Dan, what kind of accommodations do you commonly see with your high school students?
I see a lot of testing outside of the classroom. Extended time on test is big. Probably the number one for me is the verbalizing responses. Lots of times it's very, very helpful to just have a conversation with certain students that might not be able to get their thoughts down on paper.
Okay, so when you're talking about accommodations with students, what typically triggers these conversations? Are you checking in with students? Or are students coming to you with questions? How does that usually work?
It kind of starts at the beginning of the year, so I try to get in front of those conversations, and this was a learning process. My first couple years, I didn't do this, and it really backfired on me. You know, certain students saw that certain students got accommodations. They were confused as to why they didn't get that. They thought it was unfair. It was a whole mess. And so I started proactively engaging them in that conversation at the beginning of the school year, along with all the get to know you type of stuff. We would have conversations about like why certain students get different things, you
and
know.
And to clarify, are you having that conversation with the whole class at once, or is
yes.
this like with individual students?
So this is whole class. Basically, we talk about how being fair and equal isn't always enough, that we need to meet people where they're at, taking into account people's situations and circumstances.
Dan, what about you? Do kids come to you with questions about their accommodations, or are you reaching out to your high schoolers proactively?
Many of them do not come to me. So what I do is usually students come in, they have 3 minutes to do what they need to do to get ready. And part of that is if they need to see me, they can come see me. And another piece is there's a box I have, and it's a what I need box. So they can grab a note card, they can write anything about what they need for the day or you know, the next day or that week. That's there for them.
And to clarify, is that What I Need box anonymous, or are students writing their name on that and asking specifically for supports?
No. Their names are on it. So they put their names and then they put it in a box. Nobody else can see what's in the box. It's only, you know, what I can see.
Dan, what I like about your box is that it gives students a way to communicate with you one-on-one. And I'm wondering about the 3 minutes that you build into the beginning of your class each day. How do you create a place where students can speak to you about their accommodations in a way that's private?
So there's two ways I do it. I say, hey, you have the option. You can come up to me and ask me directly, or we can go out in the hall. And if I feel that it is something that that we should talk about in the hall, and you know they might not, then I'll say, okay, well, let's just take this out in the hall and we'll talk about it.
Okay, so what I'm hearing from both of you is that it is really important to find proactive ways to communicate with students about their accommodations. And it's also important to protect students' privacy and make sure you're not singling out anybody in class. Now, Dan, let's talk a little bit more about privacy. I want to ask about the unexpected situations that can come up in class, like maybe a student asking about their accommodations on the fly. This is really tricky for teachers because, as we know, student privacy is really important. I'm curious, how do you handle that?
One thing I always do is kids create their own operator's manual at the beginning of the year. How do they work best? What do they enjoy? What bothers them? What are their strengths and weaknesses? They start to open up and they share with one another. So that's usually the dialogue that starts at the beginning of the year. So that's why when these questions come into play, because sometimes it is viewed as, you know, we shouldn't be talking about these students' accommodations or particular students.
Jeremiah, your students, of course, are younger. So the privacy concerns are a little bit different. I'm thinking about when those conversations about learning supports come up spontaneously, how do you talk to students about their accommodations, especially when they don't yet know that they have a particular diagnosis?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'm not necessarily told the diagnosis, I'm just given the accommodations, right? So if students do have questions like that that I can't answer, I'll just tell them straight up, I don't know, that's a great question. You can talk to either your parents about it or you can talk to your research teacher about it. But when it comes to questions of like, well, why do I get this? Why do I get this? With fourth grade, it's a lot easier to just be like, well, because it helps you. Mm. And they'll kind of take that and be like, oh yeah, you're right, it does help. Or I'll turn it and be like, well, do you feel like that helps you when you answer things after having it read out loud versus answering it just by yourself? Do you notice a difference? And usually that kind of questioning will get them to like, oh yeah, this does benefit me. It helps me learn better. Cool. We're all good.
Now, Dan, I know our teenagers in high school don't have quite the same obsession and focus on fairness and equality, but I do know that peer pressure really intensifies with our older students. So group lessons are harder to pull off sometimes with middle and high school students. Are there any group lessons that work well with your high schoolers?
I always try to have team building activities that lead to the ability to work together and understand one another better. Have you ever heard of the spaghetti tower?
Nope, tell us.
No? Okay. Well, the spaghetti tower, each group gets 20 pieces of spaghetti, a marshmallow, tape, yarn, and a pair of scissors, and they have to build the biggest tower. Now, either I'll have them just go and do it, but there are certain times where I'll tell, if there's five kids in a group, I'll say, okay, you can't talk. You are going to sit there and be defiant. You're going to be anxious. You're going to do all the work, and you are going to just read a book. But it's very interesting in the end, because then we reflect on it after the towers are built, after 8 minutes, whatever group has the biggest tower, you know, is the winner. And we say, okay, well, what could have made us more successful at building this tower? And how did our disabilities, our weaknesses in the group affect the group? And what could we have done better? So they start to see that. And that's where a lot of the discussions build from there.
Jeremiah, could you see like another version of that spaghetti tower activity working with your fourth graders?
I heard spaghetti and I thought, oh, fourth graders would break that spaghetti into a million pieces.
Probably yes. Some would eat some of them.
Right, exactly. The marshmallows would be gone. But I think at its core, it's kind of hitting on like teamwork, and like everyone has a different strength that they can contribute. And like what weaknesses we do have, we find others to lean on. It's not about ignoring them or pretending they're not there. It's about finding other people whose strengths are compatible with you and like people you can lean on in your weaker moments.
After the break, Dan has tips for managing conversations at the high school level when you have over 100 students. And we'll talk about hard lessons learned when these conversations are mishandled. Okay, be right back. South by Southwest EDU returns to Austin, Texas, March 9th through 12th to celebrate big ideas in education. It's where teachers, researchers, and innovators come together to shape the future of the classroom. The four-day program offers opportunities to connect, discover new practices, and engage with pressing topics for learners everywhere. Learn more at sxswedu.com. Dan, as a high school teacher, you probably have over 100 students every year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you have that many students, you need a system for keeping track of all of their different accommodations and the conversations you're having about them. We heard from a former high school English teacher in Palo Alto, California. Her name is Tarn Wilson. She told us that she uses a spreadsheet to keep notes about her conversations with students or families, specifically about accommodations. That way, she can track how the students are doing throughout the year as it progresses. Dan, what do you think about that approach?
I do the same. However, I don't keep it on the computer. I keep it in a composition book. However, I know many, many, many teachers that do it on a spreadsheet.
Yeah, I love a good spreadsheet. When it does come to documenting like conversations, it's usually just in my spreadsheet. I'll just put like, we talked about this or communicate to a parent about this.
And how does that help you in the classroom?
I think it helps me in the classroom because it helps me kind of adjust things as if I start seeing patterns, you know, like, oh, this student hasn't been taking their separate setting accommodation. Maybe I need to check in on them about that. Or, oh, this student has been asking for a lot more time than they normally do. What's up? So it kind of helps me to see trends that then I can push deeper into with students.
Now, Jeremiah, I know you actually survey all of your students at the start of the year to learn how they prefer to communicate with you when they need help. How does that inform your conversations about accommodations?
Yeah, I think it just gives me a baseline of how to approach students and how to approach conversations. It really is just about letting students tell me what works for them. And, you know, in fourth grade, they may not know, but it's about giving them practice having that agency for themselves. You know, like once they get up to high school, you know, we want students who can advocate for themselves.
Okay, so it's important to document conversations about accommodations, especially when you have several classes of students to manage. And whether you have 30 students or 130, surveys might be another good way to get that communication started with your students. Now, I do want to talk about the risks when we're talking with students about their accommodations. Do you have a story about a conversation with a student that maybe didn't go as well as you had hoped? It might help teachers in our audience to hear these kinds of stories and learn from them.
I think when I was first starting out teaching, I was not trained in accommodations, in how general education and special education work together. And unfortunately for me, that led to a couple of conversations that I think did some real harm to students and families. There was one student who had accommodations. At that time, I didn't understand the importance of being discreet about certain things. And so it was kind of made a big deal each time that accommodation happened.
What do you mean by that you were making a big deal? What was happening?
So every time we did an assignment, I'd be like, all right, so-and-so, it's time for your separate setting. Go ahead and head over. And it was small and it was done in a positive way. But the fact was that student felt like they were being singled out every single time, which they were, you know?
Mm.
And that positive, cheery attitude will only go so far. And so I think for me, like, the risk is like real harm to like students, especially when you're working with younger students. They internalize so much. There can be real damage done to like their sense of self. The lesson I learned from that was like, it's so important to like seek help from the people around me. Reaching out to the SPED department, reaching out to admin. after that year, every conversation I ran by admin, I said, hey, I don't know what to do here. I don't know how to do this. And that process of, I don't know what to do, please help me, was kind of how I got to where I am today.
Jeremiah, I so appreciate that level of transparency. You mentioned harm, and I wondered, what would you say to teachers who are listening right now who feel like that they have made missteps with these kinds of conversations with students?
That's really hard because I still haven't really figured out what to say to myself. But I think part of it is like naming for yourself, like, I did not intend to do harm there. That's really important. But I think also sitting with like the impact of like, okay, like I did do harm. I always tell my students this, an apology is only as good as the follow-up. Like if you apologize and you do the same thing again, it doesn't mean anything. And so like for me, it's just about, okay, moving forward, how do I make sure that this never happens again?
How do I change my behavior based on what I've learned? Thank you, Jeremiah. Mm-hmm. Now I have one last question. What are the risks if teachers do not talk about accommodations with their students? Dan, let's start with you.
Well, the risks are we're not seeing things from their perspective. We don't know if they understand it or if they know how to do it. There have been many, many times where kids have no clue what their accommodations are. Mm-hmm. And it might have never been brought to their attention. So we know that there's a lot of legality issues as well. That comes into play. And no one wants to be caught up in that.
I mean, it's a good reminder that IEPs are legally binding documents. Yes. And teachers are required by law to provide these supports to students.
Yes.
Jeremiah, I'm thinking about listeners who might be thinking, but fourth graders are so little and these conversations are so heavy. What would you say are the risks of not having conversations about accommodations, even with younger students?
You know, some students are blessed and extremely lucky to have people around them who will advocate for them very strongly. Unfortunately, there are other students who don't have that, and they need to be able to learn how to advocate for what they need. And engaging in these conversations is one way of bringing that up, you know? So I think at the end of it all, it really comes down to like not missing students.
Not missing students. I like that.
And I can give a little bit of context here. I didn't start speaking English until like fourth grade.
The same age as your students.
Right. And so English was not my first language. And so I was kind of just mainstreamed. And I was taught like, oh, if it's hard, then you're just not working hard enough. Ignore it. Don't talk, you know, don't ask for help, all that stuff. I think of like, if I had had a teacher who had engaged in this conversation earlier on, how much easier it would have been for me to learn the lesson of like asking for help.
Here are three things I'm taking away from this conversation. One, these conversations are not easy and the stakes are high, as Jeremiah admits. But it is so important to talk about accommodations when questions come up in class. Otherwise, we don't know if a student understands their needs. Plus, these conversations can be an opportunity for kids to learn how to advocate for themselves. If you're approaching these conversations for the first time, be proactive. You could try a group activity like Dan's Spaghetti Tower to open up a discussion about learning differences and supports. Then you can revisit your lesson in class when questions come up. Dan's activity is great for older kids, but there's a really great video of a group lesson that works well with elementary students. We'll share the YouTube link in our show notes so you can check it out. Two, it's crucial to avoid calling attention to students who use learning supports. Jeremiah's story is a reminder that even when we have good intentions, we can cause harm. Dan's What I Need box is one way for students to communicate privately about accommodations. Jeremiah's survey is another option. Three, if your conversation with a student doesn't go as well as you had hoped, try getting advice from a colleague in special ed or from your admin if you feel comfortable. That can help you figure out what went wrong and what you could do differently in the future. Remember Jeremiah's story about unintentionally singling a student out with a testing accommodation? Jeremiah has a new way of handling those situations. He makes arrangements with students ahead of time. Then they go directly to their separate location on testing days instead of coming to his class first. Now, I know that is a lot on top of all the things that teachers juggle day to day. But these conversations about accommodations are so important because they help students understand how supports enable learning. And that knowledge can make a huge difference for kids, both those with accommodations and for their peers. Special thanks to Dan Volrath and Jeremiah Kim. Dan has taught high school special ed in New Jersey for almost 20 years, and he's also a consultant and an author. And Jeremiah just moved up to teach at the middle school level. Before that, he taught 4th and 5th grade in Kansas City for 8 years. We also want to thank UC Santa Barbara disability researcher Rachel Lambert for sharing her expertise in the episode. An extra special thanks to Amy Banks, whose question inspired this entire conversation and a related article on Edutopia. We'll link to it in our show notes. And if you have a teaching question or dilemma, do what Amy did and share it with us. Our email inbox is private, just like Dan's What I Need box. It's always open and we love hearing from you. The address is podcasts@edutopia.org. If you liked this episode, follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. And please, tell a colleague about the show. This episode was produced by Anne Noisani and edited by me. Our engineer is Doug Keeley, and our supervising editors are Sarah Gonser and Steve Merrill. I'm Kristen Leong. We'll see you again soon.